to the Retail Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Darius Wassefi, and today I'm speaking with Craig Skuer, VP of Product Management at SnapLogic Inc. How are you today, Craig?
I'm great. Thank you very much. Really pleased to be here.
Thank you for joining me. What is SnapLogic? What does the company do?
So SnapLogic is an organization which we build integration software. We connect the applications, data, APIs, things within and outside of an organization. So it's the modern take on the integration, the ETL, EAI functionality that we built 20 years ago for today's environment rather than the legacy environment.
Why is that important for companies, especially retailers?
The reason it's important, the flow of data within an organization today has to happen in real time. We can't wait for the cut and paste of data from one application to another. As organizations have moved away from monolithic systems, buying best of breed in point of sale, in cash transactions, and in all the different areas of an organization, many of the organizations have been buying different software that they're using around the organization, and getting those applications to talk to each other is critical in firstly having the organization know what it's doing and being able to firstly see in the rearview mirror what's happened and do the predictive analytics on looking forward on planning. And all of that requires that the data is in the right place at the right time. And SnapLogic has been, as I say, built in this generation for this generation of applications. So it deals natively with the data types. It deals natively with the challenges of networking, all of those things that are different today from those that were faced when the legacy ETL and EAI tools that essentially we replace were built 20-odd years ago.
Okay, so the challenge and the opportunity is all in the data, right? That's where companies live or die in the future, even right now. And that's basically where SnapLogic is helping them use that data. And do you also put like a visualization layer on top of it, or is it just on the API layer?
No, we're about the logistics of the data, not the visualization of it. We're about getting it moved to the right place so that you can use your SAP Analytics Cloud or Tableau or whatever visualization tool you want to, so that those you can actually represent that data. But the important thing is having the access to the data, and that's what we're the enabler of.
Okay, and that's what Gartner calls IPaaS, right? Innovation Platform as a Service.
That's correct. So as you correctly point, that Integration Platform as a Service, or Enterprise Integration Platform as a Service, it's kind of been refined a little in this latest iteration. Since we brought the product to market, we managed to have SnapLogic in that top right segment for the past 3 years on that market segment.
Okay. So now you mentioned enterprise. Is there a difference between integration, in the enterprise as opposed to in a smaller company?
The needs inside an enterprise tend to be on a very different scale. Within a smaller company, you might have transactions moving in and out of QuickBooks and those kind of things, but the volumes of data that you may be dealing with will generally be in a much smaller scale.
Right.
It may be in the thousands and the tens of thousands of transactions, whereas in the larger enterprise, we're seeing customers actually moving volumes of data in the billions of rows of data, billions of documents, billions of transactions in a day. And that's a very different scale that those are operating in.
Okay, so it's basically the scale is the difference. I mean, the performance, right?
And being able to, being built to be able to deal with both the onesie twosies
Right.
and the thousands and millions.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. You talked about monoliths, and I think we're all familiar with the monoliths and the API revolution. I like to think about it really as a revolution because before the APIs became well known and used, we used to go to these nightmare projects, and integrations used to take months and months. Those days are pretty much gone, and very quickly. It's very interesting to me how quickly this whole transformation happened. About 10 years ago, every like e-commerce project could take a year to do it, and now you can do it in a month, really get up and running in a month. And it's the beauty of the APIs and the endpoints. So what do you think is the reason that things changed so quickly?
So I think in that period, 10 or so years ago, the standardization of the APIs started to take place. And I know SOAP was one of the early things there that actually took the lead. And as more and more applications started to expose their APIs as SOAP services, which came with a descriptor file, the WSDL file, that then enabled anybody to use those, anybody in inverted commas,
Right.
to be able to use those in a fairly easy fashion because they were prescriptive as to what URL you called, what parameters you were going to pass in and what you were going to get back. But of course, one of the challenges that environment then posed was it was in a very clunky environment. That XML and SOAP environment was very prescriptive and to not make too fine a point of it, it would use an awful lot of resources to be able to do anything. What's happened is over the past few years, the REST APIs, another standard definition, has emerged. And along with the REST APIs, the description from the Open API Initiative, which a lot of people know of as Swagger, then has opened up the use of those REST APIs, and the APIs that people are exposing are more comprehensive. It's not just the exception now, it's the rule that you'll expose your data as APIs. Even governmental organizations are mandating that the interfaces will be exposed as APIs. I was having a discussion with one of the big four accounting companies in the UK last week, and this was the it's quite amusing that the requirement for APIs actually came from government and not from within that kind of organization. It's like, well, the government are telling you that you need to be innovative and leading the way. But it is important that that now has been recognized as this is the way that you can get adoption of technology and applications because if you are exposing some standard APIs, it makes it much easier to then do those transactions in much the same way that EDI took some time to get going in the retail space. But even today, it is one of the things that makes that space flow.
Right. So it's really the transition from SOAP to REST that enabled.
And the emergence of the internet enabling us to be able to actually transact in a much more open way with many more trading partners, essentially. Now that the internet has a significantly better degree of reliability, and that many of the applications that we're all using to run the business, the things like QuickBooks and Sage are all hosted in cloud applications. Now the availability of connections, it's not the connection to a particular data center, it's a connection to the cloud. And that is much, much more significantly easier to achieve than it was. So it's a number of these things which have come together at the, cumulatively, which make it possible for the applications to interact, for data to flow much more freely. But equally, you've got to find a way to then marshal that data between those different things. The last thing you want to do is introduce the requirement for heavy duty developers to enable the movement of that data. And one of the things that SnapLogic is bringing to that party is a very much more usable user interface, where you define those API interactions in a drag and drop fashion, rather than actually having to write any code. So I don't like the phrase democratization of the APIs and integration, but essentially what you're enabling is a much wider group of people within an organization to be able to take on those kind of tasks. If they understand the data that they're working with, they can then use a modern user interface to define those interactions in a drag and drop fashion, to be able to do that without having to rely on the heavy duty coders from IT is a major advance.
Right. Okay. So just to correct, probably more correctly put the evolution of integrations, it seems like it was EDI, then SOAP, and then REST.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. So that's because, I mean, even before the internet, we used to do integrations.
Yeah, but it was, none of these are going away, of course. It's all cumulative.
Right.
And, many of the EDI applications and the SOAP applications are still there, and they need to integrate with today's applications as well. And that's one of the important things, is you can't ignore the legacy.
Right. Yeah, that's very important. So, as you're talking about, really, the concept and how things are happening, and the drag and drop concept, it also reminds me of the low code or no code concept of software development. Mm-hmm. Right. So really what we're talking about is just really the beginning of the evolution of the job of a software developer or a building of applications. I think that even especially with AI becoming a lot more usable, in 5 years or 10 years from now, are we going to need so many software developers?
Yes, but a software developer will not be writing as much code. They're going to be constructing more from what has been predefined. The requirement for the integration is not going to go away. At this point of time, we have this vision with our Iris technology, which is the AI that we're implementing around our product and will be offering to our customers, we started by making suggestions, but ultimately our objective is, when you go to do an integration, you say to SnapLogic, Iris, go integrate my application A and B. And it will then be able to, using the techniques of the applied machine learning and AI that we have available today actually make intelligent integrations between the different applications that we have available. And so it will be left to the user to ensure that it's actually doing the right integrations. But getting that reliability in just the same way as, you know, the early machine learning allowed us to identify, yes, it's a cat. Well, now, you know, it's a much further down that line to be able to image recognition. You know, not only is it identifying that it's a generic, it's actually down to and which cat it is. You know, just last weekend, looking at some of the things that are being done in the wildlife space, being able to uniquely identify an individual animal in a herd is, you know, that's critical. And in the retail space, you know, being able to identify particular customers that walk through the door is, you know, using this technology is going to be part of what we get day to day. And that's going to enable us to do a great deal more. You know, the Tilda's Amazon stores, you know, they are applying this machine learning and artificial intelligence technology to the extreme, to the point that, you know, the Amazon organization is able to look at that and see that the margins that they make are still significantly significant enough to warrant, you know, actually having those stores in place.
Right. So taking a look at what SnapLogic does specifically and the products, I think the concept that from what I'm looking at is that it's a snap is a connection, right? Is an API, right?
It abstracts an API, that's right.
Okay. So looks like you have almost like a library of APIs or snaps.
Yep, some 450 or so now.
Okay. And how does a developer actually, so there is a, when a customer signs up for SnapLogic, they get access to probably a dashboard or a set of tools that are cloud-based?
That's correct. All through a web browser.
Okay. And there has to be some kind of an integration built in so that that browser interface actually works with the company's own systems, right?
Yeah. So if they're in the cloud, the customer will have access to an execution environment, which is what we call a CloudPlex. So that's our SnapPlex, which is an execution environment, is available to run as a service in the cloud. So if all of the endpoints that you're dealing with are cloud accessible, then you just use that browser user interface. And when you run something, it will run in a cloud instance. So there's no provisioning that the customer needs to do. They just use that as a service.
Okay. Now, what's involved in setting up this execution environment?
So if they need to set that up, if it's in the cloud, there is no setup for the customer. It's just provided as a service. If their endpoints are in their domain, behind their firewall, in their data center or whatever, they can then put that execution environment in the local environment. And so that would mean either, you know, running, doing an install of an RPM of the SnapPlex in a local server, or using a Docker container and just starting the Docker container in your local environment. You give it the credentials and things of the applications that you want to connect to, and the snaps that we have, those connections, having given it the necessary credentials, makes the connections out to the different applications, introspects onto them so that they can see what are the data objects that you're dealing with, and then it's a matter of dragging and dropping in the user interface to define what it is that you actually want to be integrating, what data.
Okay. What's the typical ramp-up period to get set up on SnapLogic?
That process takes less than half an hour to get the environment set up. And then we have a two-day training that introduces customers to the different areas of the product and how things are done. So generally, our customers take that two-day training and then take some additional consulting in that first month to get them ramped up. But after that first month, if they know the applications that they're dealing with, they are fully productive.
Okay.
The other way of looking at this is, we did a workshop with a new customer, or in the process of signing up the new customer, and in the space of a two-hour workshop with one of our engineers interacting with two or three of their developers, actually built five integration flows in that space of 2 hours that they had been trying to build for a year with a code-oriented tool. And they sat back at the end of the 2 hours and kind of went, this is kind of amazing what we've actually achieved here.
Right.
In the software world, we know that what you develop has to be tested and proven and make sure that it's going to meet the necessary security and regulatory environments. So, that stuff still has to happen, but it's the productivity that you get from that use of the abstraction that SnapLogic provides, which gets you delivery, time to value in the highest possible value that you can get.
Right. Okay. And I see one of your customers is GameStop.
That's right. So they're running their business, essentially the connective tissue of their business is SnapLogic.
Right. So a question that every business, especially enterprise, is going to ask before they buy an outsourced business technology is build versus buy, right? What are the questions that companies should ask or do ask themselves when it gets to the services that SnapLogic provides in the build versus buy model? What are you specifically saving from the customer having to do by actually using SnapLogic?
Firstly, there is using a tool rather than writing code. If you look at what we provide, with SnapLogic, if you build an integration which is integrating between two applications, each of those applications is going to be on its own release cycle. It's going to be iterating, adding new features, changing the APIs. One of the important things that our snaps provide is an abstraction for the customer from that, so that they can concentrate on the business of their business, not the business of integration. Because as soon as one of those applications iterates, they have their quarterly or monthly releases, and they've made a small change, you don't want to have to go back and revisit those integrations. You want them just to continue to work reliably. And that's one of the things that I and my team really focus on. With each release of our product, we make sure that we're supporting all of the innovations of the applications that we're connecting to. And as those applications iterate, we are doing the necessary updates, not our customers, so that they don't have to go and revisit those things with each of those changes. And that is, there's the time to value, which is one thing, And then there's that ongoing maintenance, which essentially is what we're doing for our customers rather than them having to do that themselves. So the total cost of ownership is going to be significantly lower by using SnapLogic than actually building it yourselves.
Right. Yeah, I mean, building a product, a software product, is just the beginning. It's, you know, and that's really where a lot of the work actually starts, is maintaining it and keeping it updated and making sure it stays alive and works performs yep. well. So,
and to be able to do that reliably across multiple developers within your organization.
Right.
If you're writing code within the organization, every coder's style is slightly different, and the complexities of, okay, well, you know, Joe who built that moved on. We've still got him on the end of the phone, but, you know, actually, if there's a requirement for an update, if you've done it with a code-oriented environment, it can get very complicated to keep those things up to date. And with SnapLogic, because it's built in this drag and drop environment, it's very much easier to maintain those things going forward.
So what's involved in actually building a Snap for your team?
So the Snaps themselves that our team build, so in the release that we've got going out this weekend, we've added some Snaps for the Adobe Cloud Platform, for instance. And so this is enabling our customers and customers of the Adobe Cloud Platform, the Experience Cloud, that they're ramping up at this point in time. You know, the value of that application and what it can provide is only as much as the data that they can look at. So if you take SnapLogic and add that into that environment, you know, the sum of the two is greater. And so our developers work with the APIs of the application, and they build the necessary Java code that supports those APIs. And the processes that we have internally and the way that we build those things means that our customers don't need to worry about errors that may happen. All of those things are being handled in the processes that we build our Java development environment, so that our customers just need to use that drag and drop environment.
Okay. So a Snap is basically a pre-built integration to another piece of software.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Now, what is the, one of the things that I think it is possible to do in the future is to go even a level beyond that and not even connect to a software, but have like quote unquote snaps or APIs connections to a capability. So let's say you are building an e-commerce website and you just want the shopping cart capability instead mm-hmm. of having to connect to, I don't know, Shopify or whatever that does that. Why not just get that feature and plug it into your service?
It is entirely feasible that could be done. Today, most customers that we are dealing with have been looking for the specific capabilities, and it's the degree of abstraction that that is right for an organization. Even higher level abstraction is distinctly possible. And there are integration companies out there that do that. I would say that, I think it's Cloud Elements actually provide, for instance, an abstraction of CRM, and you just plug in behind that which CRM you happen to be using. But one of the challenges is, at some point, you're starting to make compromises on the lowest common denominator.
What do you mean by that?
So the lowest common denominator in a CRM application or a point of sale application is going to be the minimum level of functionality, which is common across all of the applications that is supported behind it.
Right.
And so you may be compromising more because each of the different applications may be good in a number of different areas, but different ones, so that the common part may actually be quite small. And then the pain that you get when you want to use features which aren't part of that common core then restrict you down to the ones that do.
Right.
And then you're as restricted as you are with something which supports specific applications. And yeah, you're getting extra benefit from that additional abstraction. But it is, there's a balance there. And today, the right place in that balance for most organizations is having an abstraction of the application. You could abstract, for instance, an ERP system, but the abstraction of Infor and Oracle ERP and SAP ERP is going to be incredibly challenging for you.
Right. And I think really that's where things are going to move to ultimately. Mm-hmm. It's the level of abstraction, right? It's,
yeah,
are you abstracting an entire software piece like SAP ERP, or are you abstracting a specific function? Or you could even abstract to a lower level than the function itself. You know, like let's say a function says, for example, recruiting or resume ingestion. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can even abstract to a lower level of that and break that even down to get to a point where it is really going to be a la carte, like a really low level a la carte. Whereas you can say, for example, I want my soup, but I want the ingredients to be all organic and I want them to be fair trade. And, find mm-hmm. me the ones that work and put them together.
Yep, I think you have to balance the complexity of the offering that you're making with the value that customers want. So in order to get time to value, you have to have a good degree of abstraction, and it's getting that balance right of to what degree do you expose every knob and button, or do you make the intelligent defaults and build in the intelligence to alter those based on the volumes of data, the veracity of the data, etc.
Right. And this is something that I always like. Really, the future is what I'm thinking about. Is like 20 years, 30 years from now, how is software going to be built? And again, with the concept of no code and citizen developers, is the business team basically is going to completely bypass the IT department. And it's just going to say, you know what, I want a tool that does this. And
yeah, I think the IT department become the guardians of governance.
Right. And so the role of a developer is going to change. The type of things that they're going to do is going to change. And, even voice is going to be another major disruption to this whole process. And I'm a fan of science fiction. And it's interesting to me that even like in the very futuristic movies, I see still people sitting behind terminals and programming computers, they're in the space and going between phases of time and everything, and there's still somebody has to sit there and actually program the computer. So that's the part that I think the science fiction teams have not thought that there's probably not going to be any kind of like human actual coding. anymore.
Yeah, and we're very lucky at SnapLogic. We have a relationship with the University of San Francisco. Our chief scientist is a professor at the University of San Francisco, and we regularly have groups of his students doing their internships with us. And you know, some of the projects that they work on, actually, when you talk about the voice. We recently had one of the projects that was undertaken, taking advantage of the capabilities that is being published now by the big vendors of recognizing voice and actually incorporating that into the user interface. So when I said, you know, ultimately we want to be able to say, SnapLogic Iris, please integrate my organization. We're actually working on that technology, and it's real fun to actually see the results of those things. Without exploring them, you have no idea whether they're really feasible. And when we do get these explored, and having this relationship with the university, it enables us to get some really off-the-wall things underway. That team were actually what came up with our initial machine learning and AI capabilities in the first place.
Right. Yeah, that's great. I'm really happy to hear that you're actually working on that. So that's pretty exciting. Now, what about? I mean, there are other companies that do this, right? That do this type of work and in different ways. You know, for example, one company that we probably all know is Zapier. Right. Mm-hmm. So what's the difference between SnapLogic and what SnapLogic does and what Zapier does?
The focus on the enterprise is one of those, particularly the applications that we support and the integrations and the reliability that is expected of them. You know, as our customers are looking to us to provide their core infrastructure, and so they're expecting reliability, like 24/7 and 3/9 type reliability, if not greater, and the integration with the applications isn't an ad hoc user thing. It's actually the lifeblood of the organization, and we see ourselves in very much the running the business, not being an end user productivity enhancer.
Okay, so it's really the scope, and I think what it goes back again to the reliability and performance.
Mm-hmm.
And now, how do you actually manage that? How do you make sure that an API call doesn't get dropped when you have billions of transactions running?
So going down to the granular level of each of the different interactions as it's running, obviously, you know, each task that's actually taking place is logging, and they're broken down right down at that snap level, so that when a snap is running as a part of a pipeline, the snap, if it's going to make a request, an HTTP request to an application, whether it's Salesforce or some other application, the ways that you interact with that and what you can do in the event of a failure needs to be built in at that low level. And that's something that abstraction adds, that a user would never even generally even think about. It's like I make a request on the internet, you know, in my web browser, and the page appears. Well, in the background, of course, your web browser is, you know, making the request. It's polling in case, making sure that the request was received. You know, it does a lot of those things. There are some of those requests which are retryable, and there are some of those requests which could be destructive if retried. And it's that level of knowledge and subject matter expertise that we are abstracting but providing to our users.
Okay, so let's see if I get this correctly. You basically have to almost like categorize different pieces of data that are passing through and then track them individually to make sure that they do make the connection.
To track the requests and how they're made, and in the event of a failure, to then route the data that may be in an unknown state or an error state. All of that is automatic within a pipeline that we build, and customers can tailor that right the way down to, okay, if we get an error of this type from making a request to Marketo, then we should take this action. So you can just say, make that request, and in the event of a failure, it'll notify you that the failure occurred, or you can actually then build on, okay, well, if we get a failure of A, we do this. If we get a failure of B, we do that. And in the case of a total failure, we send an email throwing up our hands.
Okay. So, I mean, doesn't this all of this work actually add latency?
Well, that's the key is for what we build to be performant. And there is no doubt that if you built something which had was only one task that you'd built, making this API call, the chances are that you could make that, you code it in C++, and you could make it run as fast as a bullet train. However, the developer that built it leaves the company. Nobody knows how to put the bullet train back on the tracks when a tree falls. So building functionality and ensuring that it does it in a performant way is that's the smarts that we're building in that our customers don't need to.
Right. And I'm like really referentially referring to this, or not making a big deal out of it, but it is a huge deal. What we just talked about is a major task. It's very difficult to do. So I think that's like really a big value that any kind of this service provides.
Absolutely.
So, and then on the concept of developers leaving companies, I've never heard of that happen. When did the developer leave a company? Is that only in Palo Alto or in San Francisco, or it just doesn't happen anywhere else? Greg, this is really interesting. I'm glad to hear that companies are focusing on the API side and actually the performance of APIs and making it easier. So really happy to hear that SnapLogic is focusing on that. What's ahead? You're in charge of product. What's ahead for you? Major roadmap items, if you can share, in the next year or so.
So we've been applying machine learning inside our product to enable our customers to be able to build their pipelines more easily. One of the things that that's come as a result of that is we actually drank our own champagne in building that. So we actually use SnapLogic to build the machine learning models, to do the classifications, et cetera, to do the profiling of the data. In that process, we built ourselves a set of machine learning capabilities. One of the important things that we're going to be introducing to our customers is a gentle introduction to machine learning and enabling our customers to start experimenting with and implementing machine learning in their processes in the same drag and drop fashion that they've been used to building their integration processes. After all, data is the lifeblood of machine learning and AI, and you know, we're already moving it. So there's going to be some very interesting things that we're going to be releasing over the coming months around data and machine learning. And as I'm sure you're aware, Gartner are telling every enterprise machine learning is going to change the landscape of your industry. If you're not looking at it now, you're behind your competitors and your peers, and you should be. And so we're definitely helping customers with that journey. And I think that's going to be a very interesting capability as it gets introduced. You know, and to be able to do that in a cloud on-demand fashion where customers are only paying for what they actually use is going to be really interesting. Because up till now, in order to engage in this stuff, you had to invest huge sums of money in your own infrastructure. Well, now that's just not true anymore with the advent of, you know, IBM's Watson, the Azure technologies, the Azure machine learning, Google introducing all sorts of this technology, as well as Amazon. And so, you know, we're going to be on the forefront of that in the coming months.
So you're talking about building snaps to AI engines.
That is part of it, absolutely.
Okay. And you also mentioned voice. That's another thing that another technology you're investigating right now. So that's probably more long term, right, than the next few months.
There's always opportunities.
You never know, right?
Never know, exactly.
Okay, and you know, my favorite question these days to everybody is, how are you using blockchain? And you know, I like to see people's reactions because you know we think that blockchain is going to change everything, and it might, but how is the question?
And we're consumers of technology, so we're abstracting the complexities of the technologies. It is quite feasible that the blockchain technology itself is something that we need to abstract in the form of snaps.
That would be very interesting.
Yeah. And so, you know, amongst our team, we've got some people from very diverse backgrounds, and amongst them are some innovators in that space. So that's an interesting area.
Yeah, definitely.
But I'm not going to make any commitments.
Fascinating speaking with you.
It's been great talking to you. Thank you very much indeed, Darius.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening too.